Okay, hi. This evening we have Abby Kinchy, a sociologist working in the interdisciplinary field of science and technology studies. And she's also an associate professor in the SCS department at RPI. Hi, Abby, and thanks for being here.
Hi, Kathy. Thanks so much for having me on the show. I'm excited to be here.
Thanks. Okay, we'll just jump right in. So you have a PhD in sociology and rural sociology. Would you tell us, like, how you became a sociologist, and also what is rural sociology?
I'll try. Yeah, so I really became interested in sociology when I was an undergrad in college and realized that sociology just had these, gave us this ability to look at the rules of society and question them. And I think as a young person, many people are attracted to that kind of critical work. And it was really helpful and liberating to kind of get those intellectual tools to question things about gender and race and class and inequalities. And so then after I was out of school for a while, I decided to go into grad school. And I realized that my passion was around issues around food and agriculture and hunger. And so I discovered that there were these people that were rural sociologists, and rural sociologists focus on people who live in rural places and the social dimensions of agriculture and water and natural resource extraction, and that's where I found myself.
Oh my God, that's great. Where was the degree from?
The University of Wisconsin in Madison.
Oh, cold.
Yeah.
So your past research covers a range of topics, including transgenic crops and fracking. Can you describe some of the research, your research around controversial technologies and things you've learned about controversial technologies?
Sure, I'll try. My research usually examines conflicts in society. And the ways that people who don't have a lot of power, a lot of political power, work together to have an influence and defend things that matter to them, like their land and environmental resources. And there are always new controversies around technology that are emerging that bring about those kinds of conflict situations. So that was certainly the case, has been the case around genetically engineered crops, which are that farmers in many places in the world are not too eager to have and are concerned about how it's going to affect their livelihoods and the control of their seeds. And we see similar kinds of struggles going on today around fracking, oil and gas extraction in places that weren't energy extraction regions in the past. And I'm just drawn to looking at controversies because I think in these moments of conflict, we can often see how those in power hold on to their power and also where the fault lines are and how social movements can often get a foothold to change the way we think about big issues and maybe shift some power a little bit. You asked about some of the things I've learned. I mean, one of the things that I've observed across a lot of different cases is that industry groups and regulatory agencies that are supportive or friendly to industry groups will often try to keep their critics from having a voice by saying that only the opinions of experts matter. This is I've seen this over and over again. And yet, activists sometimes can be successful in changing and challenging that assumption, right? Mm-hmm. So in one case that I spent a lot of time studying in Mexico around the rules for genetically engineered crops, you know, all the rulemakers said, these decisions have to be based on scientific evaluation. Expert panels would come together to evaluate whether genetically engineered corn was a threat. Well, indigenous farmers and campesinos, small-scale farmers, said, well, we care about our corn for a whole bunch of other reasons. They used science. They used citizen science, collaborative community-based science, to support their claims. But they were persistent in arguing that this was not just a matter for experts to decide, but was really up to them as farmers and protectors of maize biodiversity, right, to really hang on to their traditional practices. And they were successful in many ways.
Oh, that's a great story. And actually, that leads me into the next question I have. I noticed that you wrote in 2016, you co-authored an article called Citizen Science, Probing the Virtues and Contexts of Participatory Research. Mm-hmm. So With your interest in citizen science practices and participatory research, how are these tools of social movement? And why is it important for people to politically engage in science and technology? You've talked about this a little bit, but maybe you can elaborate on it a little bit more.
That's a good question. I'll try to talk about both parts of it. So first of all, I think it's important to say that there are a lot of varieties of citizen science, right? Citizen science right now is kind of a buzzword in public policy and science funding, and even there's lots of industry, companies that are interested in supporting citizen science. And so when we use that phrase, I think we have to be really thoughtful about what it means and what it means to different groups of people. For social movements, I think citizen science can help to bring wider awareness to an environmental problem. Say if a community is able to take environmental measurements or record their own experiences of illness, and they're able to communicate that to a wider audience, that can really be powerful in bringing more people in line with a struggle. You can also use citizen science to critique regulatory agencies when they're not doing a good job. And I think participating in a citizen science project can also really help people build solidarity by working together on a project for a long time. But I think it's also important to remember that data alone won't solve problems, right? Just having the science isn't going to magically bring victory to a social movement. And so, we need to think about strategic ways to use citizen science, participatory research practices, to make knowledge that, other groups aren't doing, but also bring that into a larger struggle for social change. But you also asked about why people should think about science and technology or engage in it. I mean, I think that people should engage in discussion and critique of science and technology because they affect our lives in so many ways. And so, if you're a person who's involved in politics and you think about what your elected officials are doing, you should probably also be just as concerned about what scientists and engineers are doing, because the work that they do changes our world just as much as public policy does, but usually without our input and without our ability to vote in different representatives, right? So I think it's really up to us to become science and technology critics and advocates to have a say in how that work is shaped and done.
That's great, and probably now more than ever, right? So how do you see government playing into our food and water and energy safety, speaking of government? And how can we fill in the gaps maybe that government's leaving behind, such as now?
Yeah, I mean, this is such a tough time, right? So we see that the Trump administration is really doing all that it can to roll back environmental regulations, right, to disempower the agencies that are there to do research and to improve our natural resources and protect us from environmental pollution. And so, this is obviously something we need to be paying really close attention to right now. I do think we need much more effective and more democratic regulation of our food, water, and energy systems. And I think that it's not a question of citizen science replacing regulatory science or the work of professional scientists, because I don't think citizen science could ever accomplish the really tremendous amount of research that the EPA and other agencies do on a regular basis. But I think that, social movements and citizen science groups can do so much to shape the priorities of those agencies, and particularly in a moment right now, demand a lot more funding and power to go toward those agencies to focus on the issues that are really of deep concern to all of us.
Yeah, a lot of political action is needed, I think.
Absolutely.
To encourage people to think about that. So I know that you're also working with a professor in Chile right now around soil remediation, which is a really great project. Can you describe some of the work you both want to accomplish together, both in Chile and possibly here in Troy? What are the plans for that project?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you asked. So I just submitted a grant proposal for this project. So it's still a very, very preliminary stages. So we'll see how it goes. But the idea of this project arose out of conversations with a colleague of mine, Sebastian Ureta, who's in Chile. And he has been doing research over the last few years looking at the Chilean government's attempts to study and remediate soil contamination from the copper industry. And Chile is the world's biggest copper producer and exporter. And it produces a huge amount of pollution, particularly heavy metals in soils. And while there's growing awareness that this causes health problems, there really has been very little effort to remediate those soils. And there's very little public knowledge about it. So there haven't been many successful efforts to communicate the dangers and to help people protect themselves from the risks. So he reached out to me to find out if there might be a possibility to think about citizen science in that situation. So we applied for this grant to bring a postdoctoral researcher to RPI who would sort of take the lead in trying to develop some low-cost and easy-to-use soil testing kits. There are some things like this that already exist in the world, but it's actually not a big area of citizen science right now. There's been much more work developing water testing and air testing techniques. So we're hoping to develop a very easy and useful method that could be used in a lot of different places, including potentially here in North Troy, where heavy metal in soil is also a problem and is a real challenge for gardening and other uses of empty lots in this neighborhood and throughout the city and throughout the United States. So the project would both try to understand people's experiences of soil contamination, the governance context, right? How and why is the government not addressing these issues? Right. How is science understanding these issues? But then trying to work through a interdisciplinary, collaborative project to work with the community to understand soil pollution.
That sounds great, and it's really perfect for a project with Nature Lab. So we would very much look forward to working with you on that.
Yeah, really excited about that collaboration.
Yeah, we hope the grant comes through.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to add to this conversation?
No, this has been great. I mean, I just want to say I'm really excited about what's going on in Nature Lab as well, and I think the possibilities for collaboration, interdisciplinary, trans-academic, between academic and community organizations and, social scientists and scientists and artists and community members, it's just very exciting. And this is the kind of stuff that I want to be doing, and I'm glad to be doing it here with you.
Oh, me too. Thank you so much. So that was Dr. Abby Kinji, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.